And then before long, Gloucester made you captain.
Yes, yeah. No, this is where we start to get the changes a little bit. So in those 3 years of captaincy, certainly the first two, I do like to think I instigated some key changes. The first one was, oh, well, there you are, Steve, you're captain, go find the coach. Thank you. And thankfully, Dick Smith took on that role. For that, I'm very grateful indeed. But that was one of the first changes I recommended, shall we say, in the second year, that perhaps the club ought to start choosing the coach, and then the captain can, you know, because the two might not gel, you know, so what's the point of having the captain picking the only person who's available to do the coaching, and all hell is let loose. So that's one of the changes I instigated. Well, it didn't happen straight away, but it did happen further down the line. The club appointed the coach, it was great.
Who was coach when you first arrived at Gloucester?
Ooh, I can't honestly remember.
Was it Mike Nichols at that time?
Yes, it might well have been, yes. I think you could be right, yeah.
I think it was, wasn't it?
I think it was Nick.
Yeah, that's right.
Later on, towards the end of that first season, I was captaincy. I mean, all the players' bar was always, you know, change rooms underneath the clock, little players' bar there, men only, Digger Morris guard in the entrance. Bless his heart and bless his soul. What a great person Digger was.
Singing you a few songs.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But I came out one Saturday after a home game. Not the first out of the changing room by any means, or out of the players' bar. And I got stopped by this older lady. I thought it was someone's mum. Oh, you know, so-and-so in there. Who, sorry? It turned out she was the referee's wife. She'd been stuck outside, not allowed in. Digger, men only, no women. So, we got to change this a little. We got to try and come into the 19th century, the 20th and 21st. So that's when I said to my wife Irene, right, and to the rest of the players, right, we're going to start going in. Yeah, the girls will come in with us into that players' bar. Sorry, Digger. Yeah, he started to accept it. But in the end, we moved from there over. He used to close off the old Skittle Alley for us. So that's how we got this. The players' bar moved over to the big club, which was excellent. You had the Skittle Alley for the players' bar. Your special guests could come in. Then you're out in the big public bar and debate the virtues of the game, whether you won or lost or how you had done. Yeah, so I like to think I made a few changes along the way.
Yeah, yeah. Did you enjoy being captain?
Very much so. It was hard work. I think the rugby side of it wasn't too bad. The club were always very good, but sometimes a bit fickle or tight on certain things. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But I think it was more the players, really. The older players were fine. It's new players coming in. They were always wanting to rebel and question everything. So some of the players' meetings got a bit fraught sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think the club, I mean, when we drew the cup down at Moseley, I always remember, I think, I met as being captain with Fordy and co. We're going to go through the itinerary for the, you know, for the John Player Cup game and everything. He was on about point 20 in the list. I was on point 2, trying to get tickets for those who weren't involved. And then when we turned up at Moseley, he managed to, the wives and girlfriends managed to get on a coach with other players who weren't involved. So finally got transport up there. As they turned into Twickenham car park, our lady, everyone saw the Moseley tables all laid out, hams, champagne. The ladies looked into little cardboard boxes with a chicken leg, a cake, and questioned, maybe. Perhaps, Steve, you could have done a little bit better. But that was Gloucester. It was old school and tough.
One of the things I did mean to do was turn on, you know, to the period when you were captain to ask you to go through and tell us about the players who were in the team under your captaincy, because they've changed somewhat from when you first joined, that we talked about.
That's right. Yeah. So if I do 81, 82 then. Mike Teague, what more can you say? Teague. a bit fussy now and again where he wanted the ball in the lineup, but what a great player. I mean, we were lucky. I can remember Teague, there was a time around about this era, maybe the season before the record season, where I want to do motocross, you know. He was a bit undecided, but he came back, thankfully.
So what words come to your mind in describing Mike Teague?
Him and John Gadd, the terrible twosome, I'll tell you. Oh, I'll put those two together, all right? They would question everything. And be given some forthright answers sometime. Stevie Parslow, I haven't seen him for a long time. Stevie Baker, great scrum half. Yeah, I really like Bakes. Scrum halves, I rate over how they put the ball into the scrum. That's all I'm really worried about, you know, yeah. They win or lose or whatever. Kingo, as we said, great scrum half, but 10 moves ahead, you know, head up, looking round, see, you know, the flap, and then 10 minutes later the ball will come in. Thanks, Kingo. I was making an extreme of it.
Do you see photographs of him, though, at the scrum, looking around?
Like, you just have to concentrate his mind. I'm not worried about what's going on. I'm worried about this little bit, all right? Let's sort that out. Stevie Bakes was really good. Yeah. John Gadd. Oh, Les Jones. Jeez, I forgot about him. Mike Longstaff, what a great back row forward he was. Stevie Boyle.
Converted from fullback, too.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Boyley. I always remember Boyley on training. You know, he was the only one who could virtually beat the three quarters in the sprint. Boyley. About the only one he wouldn't beat would be Moggy. A talented person. Fordy as well. Remember kicking that goal and the John Player. Phil Pritchard, Dr. Pritchard, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Mr. Taylor, Mr. Preedy, Moggy, John Ormond, Stevie Ashmead, another one I forgot.
He scored some tries for Gloucester, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, little Stevie Ashmead. I mean, it really felt unbalanced because he really was that short, but when he bent over, you know, it all evened itself out, sort of thing, but a bit worrying. Clusey. Who have we got before that? No, we've mentioned Sarge. Oh, Colin Price, ex-Lidnick. I mean, what a great person he was. Padraig Conway. Yeah, Sarge. Paul Howell there. Paul Howell, my number one scrum half for Feeding.
Mm.
Excellent. Howler, I remember we went up to play a John Player game up at Gosforth. I think we lost 6-3. It was Howler's first game, so I was very worried about the ball Feeding because it hadn't been going well in practice. You know, you look at this, follow my flat, follow my hand. If it's there, you just follow it. Watch. I'm worried about this. We're in the changing room. Berto comes over and says, "Well, I'm going to upset." Fine, all right. What it bore down to, was it Colin Fisher? Colin Fisher was the hooker, I think. And I think Berto nibbled his ear or something. So everyone flares, the punches get flying, all right? And then it all settles down again. I'm happier because we've had a couple of scrums down, the feeling's been excellent with Howler, I'm happy like that. And I think Sarge pulled a hamstring, I think. All right? So he goes limping off, and I hear this baying. Because on the far side is this little rickety stand, and there's Blakeway lumbering over, much to the worriment of the gospel people. But we still lost that. I think it was 6-3 we lost that one. Yeah. No, great names. I see some of them, not all of them all the time, but seeing a lot more, like I said, because of the ex-players thing, which is really good. Yeah. Lots of memories. I need this to go around when I see people as I'm getting a bit older now. I forget some of the names.
Yes.
Or everyone should wear name tags, I think, at the players' games. Yeah.
And what was it like working with Dick Smith as coach?
It was good. He had some good ideas. I don't think I can make a great coach like I think Dick did. I'm fine on specialist coaching, scrummages or throwing in or whatever. But Dick had that wide vision, and it certainly made it pay, especially in that central season, that record season. So, yeah, he had great vision, I think. I think I came from his his position, really. You know, best of both worlds, in the back row, you're looking and seeing everyone, and the input which he had from the great names in the past, you know, playing with the likes of Buffer Bayliss and people like that.
Well, of course, that 1981-2 season that you've referred to as the great season, I mean, it was actually the greatest season ever for Gloucester.
It is, and hopefully will remain that way for a long time. Well, I mean, the amount of games we played, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, with 2 games a week right up to Christmas, you know, always playing the Welsh boys. Hard work, extremely hard work, but you had to be consistent. You had to be consistent at home, you had to be consistent away. And if you make your own luck, it comes with you. Yes, we had a little bit of luck. We had about, I think, 4 drawn games in the scores, but we didn't lose them.
But you still won 41.
Yeah, we still won 41.
48.
Yeah.
And only lost 3.
Only lost 3, and who did we lose against? Was it Cambridge?
Cambridge, Cardiff, and Bristol, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Cambridge
one was funny. It's a bit hard because it was an away game. All across country, and I said usually the older players or those who are going to question, what can we have for our meal tonight? You know, can we have the main course and the pudding? No pudding, you get more in the beer kitty. But I suppose by the time we got there, I think everyone, if it had been a King's Home, it would have been different. We were on a bit of a cloud, and Cambridge pulled us down to earth on that one. Mm. Not everyone played 100%, really, but you've got to try. That goes against what I'm saying about the consistency bit, but I think we could allow ourselves one bad game in that season.
What are the? I mean, we've started off talking about the very few losses in that season. Which of the victories stand out in your mind?
Which of the victories? That's a good one. It was a blur. I mean, to have wins, I'll give you an example. Like I said, we're over in the Skittle Alley for the players' bar. We come through into the big public bar, had yet another win. Everyone's got a few drinks on board, and we spend the night discussing why didn't you win better than that. What do you say? You know, we churned out the win, but perhaps it could have been a little bit better. Fair enough, point taken. Yeah,
great to be in that sort of position then.
It is, yeah. It was a great team thing. Everyone supported each other. That was the main thing. And everyone trusted each other. Mm. We trained, we played together. We went out after games and stuff. It was a great group. You know, the wives and girlfriends just get on well. And the big social bar was a huge gathering for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that went all the way through. And help strengthen the squad.
You beat Coventry away in the semi-final.
In the semi-final.
That must have been quite a...
Yes. I think that's maybe where I was picked up on TV, I think. Who was the referee in that game? You got that?
Oh, I don't know.
No?
Going from
there. If I remember, I can picture him. I can't put a name to him. I do believe I was penalised for kicking someone. So I was sort of jumping over. I did point out the referee is my own player, which I had actually connected with. But no, whistle. So I'm seen walking back, and if you could lip read on Rugby Special as it was, and you would have had a very good choice of Anglo-Saxon, I'm sure, concerning my thoughts on the referee and his parentage. But we came through and win. I think it was a fairly close score, wasn't it?
89.
Yes, and a couple of penalties I think came through and saved the day on that one. But like I say, they all blur into each other. There's so many of them.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the notable features of your career, I think, is actually how many games you played in a season.
Personally or overall?
Personally.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, I did, I think during that period, I made the conscious effort of, I declined county games to play for the club. Maybe a bit more so in the third season when we weren't doing quite so well. But the club always came first to me. I had no problem saying no to the county. I gave them the reason why. And to me, that was a good reason.
But in that first season, you played 38 games for Gloucester. You played county rugby. Yep. You played divisional rugby.
Yeah.
You made your debut for the Barbarians.
That's right, yes.
No, you didn't actually. You previously played for them on the Easter Tour, hadn't
you? I've been on the Easter Tour.
You played
tour,
again
right.
for Barbarians, I should have said.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on the England bench.
That was the Northampton game, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah. That time, yes. Previously, you'd been on the Easter Tour with the Barbarians. A couple of years before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've done just about everything. How many games you played in total in that first season of captaincy? I can't imagine, quite honestly, but it must have been approaching 50.
I should imagine so. Yeah,
has to have been.
It would have been, and that's how you throw in all the, well, it worked out to be daily training one way or another, whether you're travelling or not, down to Stourbridge for England, Bristol for the south and southwest in the county.
Yeah.
And they were busy times.
Non-England bench into the bargain.
Very much
apart
so.
From all the games you played.
The trouble was, it got very cold on the England bench. You know, cause,
Peter Wheeler again?
Yeah, wheel brace always. Yeah, I didn't get injured much, I'm afraid. But I mean.
But nor did you, did you?
No, I didn't, totally. But in those days, you only got on if it was an injury. You know, there's no technical subs or anything like that. So it used to be disheartening sometimes. I can remember being up in Scotland when they beat the Scots up there, and Billy Beaumont being chaired off and everything. Gordon Sargent was with me, and the subs, we went to the changing rooms erupted when you get back in, and the little group of subs sat in the corner mulling over a couple of pints of Guinness or whatever was there. You got euphoria on one side, and we're part of it, but we didn't get to play.
Yeah.
It's a funny feeling, but after a few beers it all disappears. But got very cold on the England bench.
Well, of course, there was a predecessor of yours as Hooker of Gloucester, Bumps Carpenter, back in the 1930s, who had very much the same experience.
That's right.
Indeed,
yeah.
Only ended up with one England cap against South Africa. Having been a reserve, 20 times or
something. Very much so, yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
No, I didn't, no.